does not allow sin to exist without giving a person enough actual grace to override it.
Anyway, I think you and I have fairly well, by this point, indicated where the fault lines occur.
Right.
And it might be proper for us now to field some questions or comments from the audience.
Totally.
And see, Pat, why don't you start?
Thank you. Vinny, in the last portion of your statement, you referred to, and correct me if I state it wrong, but you referred to your method as compared to Christ's method of direct confrontation with someone in regards to the truth. Why then did he not call those people back who walked away from him when he said, unless you eat my body and drink my blood, you will not have life within you? He didn't say, wait a minute, do you agree or don't you agree? And don't walk away because you're in danger of going to hell. He didn't do that. Why not?
Exactly. Told me we're in danger of going to hell. Unless you...
I never saw that printed.
Unless you drink my blood, eat my flesh and drink my blood, you will not have life within you. Now, if we understand the normal terminology of life in the scriptures, it means salvation. Now, it might exactly the same way. Unless you accept this, you will not be saved. That's exactly... Now, why did you not...
Yeah. It's not black and white.
It is black and white.
Now, wait a minute.
I'm sorry, misunderstood.
Your words earlier indicated that unless it says it exactly in those words, black and white, you're not going to accept that.
No.
Carl's indication was, in regards to whether or not you need to be a card-carrying
mm-hmm.
member of the church, that it's possibly a matter of traditional interpretation of what the folks have said, rather than black and white, there it is. In this case, it seems to me, there's two different phrases. Yes, they do mean the same thing. And I led you to that, hopefully, so that it could be illustrated that, yes, Christ said the same thing you did, but much differently. Much differently. He didn't push them into a corner first and then say, no, pay up or get out. He said, rather, folks, this is the way it's going to be, and if you don't accept this, you do have a problem.
When
they walked away, he didn't call after them. He didn't call after them. They went.
Yes.
Did they not have
sufficient
grace?
I think I answered the question. The rest of it was a comment, and I think Carl wants a comment, so please.
No, I think you can answer his point, actually, Vinny, which was Pat was making a comment on methodology more than anything else,
right.
And indicating that our Lord wasn't using the Vinnie Lewis method of apologetics.
I disagree totally. He was exactly using that. Now, why didn't he go after him? For the same reason he allows you to go to hell. He whispers, he calls, he confronts, and he lets you go because he will never violate your free will. In the same way I can. What I'm saying, quite frankly, is this. Like when he says, not everyone who says, Lord, Lord, but only he who does the will of my Father will come into heaven. And when he says at the last those other last judgment scenes, when he says, people say, I did this in your name, I did that in your name, I cast out devils, he says, depart from me, you evildoers. Yeah, pure confrontation. He who is not with me is against me. Okay. He puts it that way. He drives the dichotomy. He who rejects you rejects me. Okay. Now, what I'm saying is, I am doing exactly that. I'm saying, yes, if you're saying I don't use the exact same words, frequently I don't. Okay. But then again, what we're talking about is, if we want to get into really technical problems, translations. He didn't speak English. This is another translation of a translation of a translation. Sometimes it's varied for modern ears, and I try to vary it sometimes in my confrontational situations with the person I'm dealing with. Sometimes I play Mr. Intellectual College Graduate. Sometimes I play Mr. High School Lowbrow. Sometimes I'll use fancy words. Sometimes I won't. I do try to be, in a sense, not all things to all men like St. Paul, but a lot of things to a lot of different people. What I'm simply saying is here, is that I deny the validity of your statement. We have a factual disagreement, and I guess it would have to be a matter of ultimately picking verses out and coming to a conclusion. But what I'm saying is, I'm answering your question by saying your statement was wrong, and I disagree with your statement, and that's my position. Okay.
Thanks for that phrase of brevity. Let's go to another question.
Go ahead.
I read a
the letter by John Newhouse that may shed some light to you. And I think, and I'm not, you know, I'm going to miss some things, but what he said is in the Catholic Church, he didn't say it, the Church says, contains the fullest expression of God's will and truth on earth through time and history. In the Protestant churches and even in other faiths, there are some elements of the truth. Now, what Newhouse pointed out in his letter of explaining his conversion is, and he pointed to the what the Church says in Vatican II, I believe, that all authentic portions of the truth tend to bring people in union and full communion with the Roman Catholic Church through time. The authentic understanding through time and grace acting in the person tends to do that, not that it necessarily will. Newhouse tended to say there is an element of denominationalism, just strictly that, within the American culture and Protestantism, that he could not conscious when he realized as a free agent learning and growing, that Luther's understanding was that there would be no permanent break with Rome. Okay, after he went off the scene, this was sort of solidified and became an end in itself. And he said basically that Trent was incorporated the protest of the Protestants and clarified their misunderstandings, and should in three time you can find the gospel preached in the church in the unity that Christ wanted. There was no intellectual reason for him, as people asked him, why do you maintain yourself outside the Catholic Church? After a while, he couldn't give a reasonable answer to that, and then he decided to do the logical thing, is to join. But I do know as a person, okay, I went through a period of, I suppose, unbelief or disbelief, maybe just the process of adult conversion. And I said, all right, now I believe that that my God made me, and I believe that this was Christ and his message. And I said, all right, what church should I belong to? I will put it on an even playing field. What really dropped me back into it, and this may not be pertinent, is when I picked up Olimo's tracts in a fundamentalist area, and they said, all Catholics are going to hell. I said, pasta fizzle to you. And it blew me back into the doors of the church. And then I wanted to understand my own faith. And in that process, there's a lot of, the heart has reasons the mind knows not of. And where that fits, I don't know. But I just wanted to put that in the equation, and I'll shut up.
Said that in order to be all the great speakers are not the people who go point for point like a debate, that they're the people that speak to the hidden emotions. And so I would say that, I mean, if you were going to improve your techniques, you would begin to try to also speak to the emotions and the inner feelings of some of the Protestants, and that would make you more effective. For instance, yesterday when we were talking to the nuclear people out here, I was talking to a guy, and I made the statement on Mother Teresa, the fruit of abortion is nuclear war, and that if you destroy the fundamental relationship between a mother and child, or a father and his child, that all those relationships that are above that on the pyramid, why won't they also be destroyed and the fruit of abortion is nuclear war? And then we talked about abortion, this and that. Anyways, when it was all up, he was impressed with that argument. And when it was all over, we had talked a little about God and souls. He says, you know, I wish I could believe what you believe. And that's how we left. And I thought that was a positive thing. In other words, he didn't convert to what I was saying, but at least he was saying, I'm open to it. And you know, when it says in the Bible, knock and you shall receive. And so if that was his knock, now it's in God's ballpark to do the finish up.
Well, you handled that, I think, exactly the right way. One thing that you were smart enough not to do is to expect an instant conversion. We find instant conversions, say, to fundamentalism, through the mediums of the TV preachers. Those conversions often don't last, the instant ones, because the person has gotten to a position through a lot of often prayer, thinking, personal trials, and to expect them to come over to our position instantly isn't sensible. And if he does, we think that he hasn't really had an authentic conversion. So what you did, the way you did it is proper. You plant that seed, you make it known to him that you're open to discussion, that he has something to think about, you let it percolate a while, and then if you can, you get back to that individual and proceed from there. Go ahead, man.
Thank you. I think it's a perfect example of the differences in our approaches. What I'm saying is you should have expected an instant conversion, because I'm saying all of history came up to the crisis at that point. And if the man said, I wish I could believe what you believe, then what he was saying is his act of will was he was asking for faith. And at that point, God will not let him remain in unbelief, in sin, because God does not tolerate sin. He does not tolerate sin to be maintained. He always gives enough actual grace. I'm saying the man didn't mean it. What he made was a nice American-type statement, the nice, normal-type thing we say to someone when he expresses a nice view, which our heart says is correct. We say, you're really a nice person. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your beliefs. And let's go on to something else. That's like I'm personally opposed to abortion. What he was saying is I'm personally in favor of abortion. Too bad I can't bring my heart around to it. No way. God made his heart. God made his brain. God's been whispering in his ear. So is his guardian angel. So is the Blessed Mother. He was ready to go at that point. He just wanted to say something nice because his conscience bothered him. And my point was, you should have got an instant conversion. I think it's a perfect example of
what they just expected to make a response. I was reading once, I think from Sister Faustina, there was a person who was an alcoholic, and and Sister Faustina or somebody, I forget exactly where I got this from, was saying, geez, what do I do and how do I tell this person to overcome his problem? And supposedly the advice from the Blessed Mother was, tell him to gradually cut it out. And in other words, it was a weakness on his part. And in a way, maybe this nuclear fellow was saying, I have weakness. And what I'm saying, isn't it possible that he needs to gradually overcome the weakness, as same as the person who is addicted to alcohol, let's say. You can't always just instantly quit drinking. Maybe the...
Just one comment. You can't always instantly quit drinking if drinking is a sin, because you can always instantly avoid sin immediately. You're always given enough actual grace, whether you're in your state of grace or not. Sin is never excusable, never tolerable under any circumstances whatsoever. That's my statement.
The bottom line is that going to work?
It always. But the better method is not sin.
How much I appreciate the work both of you do. I'm not choosing between. I'm just so glad you exist and do what you think is right. There are three texts that come to mind, and I'm not confronting you either, but one is where the apostles come to Jesus and say that there's a group of people curing, and they're not of our group, and they're curing in your name. And he said, well, if they're not against us, they're with us. Is that right?
Yes.
The other text is where he admonishes the rabbis, saying, you'll go over land and sea for one proselyte, and you make him more a son of hell than yourselves. And you tell your converts that you tell the people in your charge that to tell their parents. I mean, Moses said one thing, that you honor your mother and father, and you say to tell your parents, everything I have is given to Korban, that is to God, so don't expect anything from me. That means a lot to our family, because we've lost two kids in a cult that just does exactly that. And the third thing is, if Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, aren't those who say that our faith is more a person than either doctrine or liturgy?
Your last point, I think, is really the key one. What we're presenting here is not so much, we should be presenting, not so much cold-cut doctrine, but the person of Jesus Christ, whom we have to present through our own actions, and how we come across to people. Okay? Remember the woman at the well and so on. He could handle that any number of ways. Right? But in your case, you have children now who've gone out and joined a cult. You're probably aware of people who would attempt to browbeat them back into acceptance of the Catholic faith. You may have tried that yourself. You may have had someone else try it. That kind of thing generally doesn't work. Usually cultists, and all the more this applies to people who aren't cultists, such as Protestants, will accept more likely what you say if you present it to them well, respect them as individuals, sit down with them, take time with them, and don't give yourself, well, we have an hour, if you don't convert, you're going to hell. That simply doesn't work. This has become the most important thing in their lives. You've got to allow time enough for the truth that you give them to percolate through, and then follow up with further things and bring them along. And you also, during the whole of this, have to be conducting yourself in a very proper way to make your faith attractive to them. They want to be what you are. You need that combination. Either one alone won't be sufficient.
Allow me to agree with Carl on the last. Our behavior is absolutely essential, and it's essential among course, other reasons. If we do not behave correctly, we don't go to heaven. Let me comment on your first passage. Absolutely correct. Jesus says, in this case, he who is not against me is with me. Although, about two chapters later, says the exact opposite. It's in Luke around 9 and 11, where he says, he who is not against me is with me. The point was, in this case, these guys, we do not know from Scripture, and that's another thing we have to go on, we do not know their doctrine, but we do know that they were doing good things, and Jesus is judging their behavior. Later on, when he criticizes the Pharisees, it's because they are attacking him doctrinally. That's when he says, he who is not with me scatters. The point I'm making is the doctrine is key. Allow me to throw the last thing in on Carl's point about preaching or asking these people to approach the person of Christ. I agree perfectly. The person of Christ happens to be in a church approximately 2 miles from here, in a tabernacle, in a box, and he looks like a piece of bread. Now, the only reason I know that person of Christ is there, the only reason I can become two in one flesh with him is because of doctrine. If I go and take my Protestant friend there and show him this, it may happen that he may receive some infusion of direct grace by which he will now believe. But if he does not believe the doctrine first, if he is not convinced of the truth of the doctrine first, he will avoid the physical presence of Jesus on this planet right now, today, the same Jesus who walked the earth and died on the cross. And if we are preaching to Jesus Christ, and we are saying that one must have this relationship with Jesus Christ, one must approach Jesus Christ, one must taste the Lord and see how sweet he tastes, then one must understand the absolute necessity of the doctrinal position first. Otherwise, you're introducing him to what appears to be a piece of bread. And he might be polite, but he'll see it purely symbolically.
Doesn't that kind of eliminate the children who don't understand?
No, I get it. Understood in the beginning of my discussion, I was talking only about adult people in America today, Protestant. Again, the only reason I wanted to keep it narrow to that is because if you expand it to other things, and I have no problem dealing with that, and as I say, my take, The Last Judgment, I believe deals with this entire process, but it took me an hour to get it briefly on tape, and I tried to limit the talk, and I thought Carl and I agreed we would limit to this. So what we're talking about is adult Protestant Americans, at least that was the starting point for the discussion. And of course, the child is a totally separate matter. And I don't believe it eliminates them at all.
I just want to ask a question. Can you account for someone, for example, who receives the truth, but by virtue of the fact that it's such a startling different cast that he doesn't attribute anything to the truth you've just told him but the fact that you are a kook. Right? Now the point is this is a very basic...
This is definitely directed to Carl.
What I meant was it could be, I'm just, this is self-revelation. Actually, I'm going to confess now. But, what I meant is that the person who hears this truth, it will be very much like the apostles. They don't understand what you're saying because they don't know the confirmation of your mind and how you approach them. But the point is that their reaction at that time cannot be, I think, as seminal a moment in history as you would lead us to believe, because they are also, with their own history, coming to a different point where that fact that the body of Christ is lying before them can be, at that moment, in their heads, the most ridiculous thing they've ever heard in their lives, right? Not only ridiculous, but it could be the most dangerous. They may have been prepped, what I'm trying to say is that Christ certainly understood this, because he laid the truth out there, but he's not trying to scare you into this at all. He's simply saying, this is the truth, right? And if you don't accept it, that's all right, too, but there it is. I've come to bring you the truth and the light and whatever, right? But he didn't say, if you don't take it, guys, you're finished. He didn't say that. He said that, he said in a much more general way.
Well, it was directed at you.
Well, no, I just light. It's unusual for me, so forgive me. Okay. Number one, if we're talking about baptized people, they were prepped from the fact that they received the sacrament of baptism to accept truth. Number two, you're absolutely correct. One would take that as a kooky thing, just as they did when Jesus talked about the real presence, just as when he forgave the sins of the man on the paralytic. Those were kooky things. And that is exactly the point. Our religion is both supernatural and, in a very real sense, unnatural. God becomes man. And a man sits in a box and says, I forgive you, and somehow that's God forgive you. Another man stands at a table, says, this is my body, and a piece of bread becomes the flesh of Jesus Christ. A bishop puts certain oil on your head, you become confirmed. Another man pours water on you, without that you can't get into heaven. Boy, these things really are kooky. You're absolutely correct. Now, and that is the point. I believe that if you present Christianity correctly, it will seem shocking, unnatural, bizarre, and strange, particularly to those who have taken a naturalistic point of life. I think Chesterton deals with this a lot, that the truly sane man would be considered insane in an insane world. I think all of us will agree that, as we can use those terms, this is an immoral, evil, insane world.
The question he was driving at, I think, is not so much whether the doctrines might appear to be kooky to the non-believer, but whether they are packaged and delivered by someone who appears to be kooky.
Yes, I agree with that. I appear to be kooky to people, of course.
The point is then that let's say that the doctrines don't appear to be kooky. In fact, the argument might appear to be sensible on the surface to this individual. But he says, I'm looking at the person who's giving me the argument, and I see, here I'm not referring to you because we're aware of your sanctity from earlier, but this guy is a gross sinner, say, although he's telling me what sounds logical, or I have no evidence of a moral failing, but he seems, brusque or what have you. And if what he's saying is true, I would think that it would manifest itself in his life in a certain way, a certain comportment, and so on, which I don't see in the case of this missionary or evangelist. Therefore, I'm inclined to think that although I see the logic, his logic and my understanding of the logic may be flawed, and I don't really have to adhere to this because I know as a human being that my logic, my reason is limited. Many times I've thought something to be true and sensible and syllogistic, and it's turned out not to be. And so I have to always measure that element of it against what it's done in the life of the person who's giving me the message. And if it seems to me that it hasn't produced what it should produce, I'm going to be disinclined to open my heart and my mind to it.
Well, allow me to comment further, if I may. Okay, number one, let me go on record again as being a great sinner. Those of you who are interested, yes, I'm a sinner. I have sinned. I probably will sin again today, and I probably will sin again for the rest of my life. No excuse for it. I am a sinner, absolutely. But, as Jesus usually does, he bails me out with the gospel message today. Anybody pay attention to it? Do everything the Pharisees say, but don't pay attention to what they do. Don't do what they do. There is exactly the principle of Jesus saying, the message is separate from the messenger. Now, if you want to say, therefore, that, okay, fine, you'll be rejected because I personally, Ben Lewis, am a sinner, yes. But Jesus says the opposite. His principle, which is universal for man, for all times, for all places, is separate the two. It's exactly what he said today. Now, number two, Jesus did present it exactly the opposite way that you say. Yes, it's exactly what he said. Take it from me or go to hell. Literally. He did not allow a middle choice to those people. And I'm saying he does not allow it again today. Ultimately, we go to heaven or hell. Ultimately, you wind up having accepted Jesus or you wind up rejecting him. And what the way to do that is to understand that people are at crossroads. My opinion, my expression. But the point I'm making is, once again, we disagree on facts. I would say at this point I would have to, you know, show you a lot of passages in Scripture. But the point I'm making is I disagree with your position saying that Jesus did not present things that way. There was a question in the back. Questioner.
Yeah. I don't agree with your immediate conversion because this is the pinnacle of all history. Like, faith, we know, is something that is not, it can be strengthened and weakened, or certain sins or certain omissions that we do that either strengthen or weaken our faith. And to expect someone to, who has never been presented with the truth before in such a manner to just completely well, first of all, I disagree also that you have to understand to be saved also. I don't, like you said you have to understand the doctrines to accept the truths, such as Christ in the tabernacle. If you bring your Protestant friend, he won't understand it. The only way you believe he's there is through the doctrines. Did you say that earlier?
I don't believe so. Go ahead.
Okay, I thought you said that. Because that, okay, if you didn't, then never mind. But that's one point. Faith is something that that you have to work on. It's something we all work on. I mean, our faiths are weaker and stronger. They fluctuate greatly, especially mine. But also, that so okay, and you said God judges by that passage that my mother brought up about they, I don't know what they're doing. You judge them by their works, right? I just like to bring up C.S. Lewis. He never came into faith, unfortunately. But I mean, as far as when if I judge him by your standards, right now he's roasting in hell. But if and I just think it's very presumptuous on your part to say that someone who does not convert instantly, or even convert, as you say, conversion to nothing, that he is going to hell, yes. But if you put too much emphasis on the conversion part, and yet you seem to disregard it, that seems to be a thing, a dichotomy in your, or not a dichotomy. You know, a contradiction.
Right.
And also that, no, that's about all.
Okay, would you like to talk about?
Well, I did
know you agree with him.
Okay. Well, I did notice your grunt of agreement to the position he, not his position, but the one he gave, that C.S. Lewis, never having come into the Catholic Church, must be in hell, and you grunted yes. I do think that's a certain presumption. I can see it under your thinking. Lewis obviously was a very intelligent man. He was quite well versed. He was a well known Christian apologist. And he knew these issues certainly better than the average Catholic does. He had read the early sources and the fathers and well versed in the Bible. And for whatever concatenation of reasons, he did not become a Catholic, and there are various notions as to why. But I just found it interesting the lack of reluctance on your part to withhold your grunt, even the church, the church has never defined that any individual is in hell, not even Judas. What the Bible says about Judas is that he went to his own place, and that doesn't sound too promising. But the church never has had a reverse canonization. And so I think maybe we ought to be a little cautious about this.
Okay, thank you. 2 points. Just let me answer this, if I may. I consider it important. Okay, let me. Number one, no one with the last name of Lewis can go to hell. It's a private revelation. It was the third secret at Fatima. And you will find it in the most recent issue of the Fatima Crusader Blue Army Journal this week, why the consecration wasn't made.
Okay.
But the point was this. I did not say C.S. Lewis was in hell. I am not saying who is in hell and who is not, because I cannot judge such things.
You've got to control your grunt, then.
You've got to control not interrupting me, Carl. Thank you. Yeah. The point
if I don't
is,
interrupt, I never get a point in.
You can't get a point in, Carl. You're not capable, but it's not doing an interruption. Now, the point here is that unless people are going to hell, Jesus lied because he describes people going to everlasting torment. That's number one.
Well, this ends the tape. That is to say, it ends the discussion. You might have heard me becoming distracted by a voice that called out. That was Mr. Kinisny telling us that lunch was ready and that according to his tight schedule, we no longer could continue the talk, so it ended. And since Carl has not seen fit or has not been willing to accept my invitation or my challenge to continue the matter, this is where it remains. At this point, I would like to make a few final points. Number one, there are a number of related tapes which ARM produces, which you may obtain, which will clear up some of the difficulties which you may have had. Those are T12, which deals with the Last Judgment, T32, which deals with the dogma of no salvation outside the church, T29, which deals with invincible ignorance. Those are all T as in Thomas. H1, which deals with the real value of truth, H4, which deals with salvation, H2, which deals with the role of the church. Let me repeat again, in case it has not been clear. The church's dogma, teaching, the magisterium of the church, the formal papal pronouncements, the council teachings, the teachings of the fathers and the doctors of the church, affirm the following. Heaven is populated by Catholics. You must be a Catholic before you can enter into heaven. I don't know any other way to put that, but I'll try to put it in another way. There are no non-Catholics in heaven. There are no Lutherans, Methodists, Episcopalians, pagans, Mohammedans, Buddhists, or Hindus. Everyone in heaven is a Catholic. Everyone in heaven had to become a Catholic before he entered heaven. That is a simple consequence of the logic of the position which holds that truth is of value. If truth is of value, then it follows automatically that truth is necessary for salvation. If truth is not necessary for salvation, then it has no value, and all religions are the same when it comes to achieving salvation. Because the only difference between our religion and every other religion is the fact that our religion is true and their religion, the other religions, are false. I would also point out that, of course, without this being the keystone of evangelistic, apologetic, and conversion efforts, you will not have success in converting someone. You may very well get him to change his affiliation from one church to another, but affiliation is not conversion. Conversion means that one willingly accepts the dogmas taught by Jesus, revealed to the apostles, and preserved in the Roman Catholic Church as necessary for salvation. That one accepts the Catholic way of life, which includes honoring the Blessed Mother and accepting her, the facts of her life and her death, as true and as necessary for salvation, and venerates her. Without this, you cannot get into heaven. That is a simple fact of life. I would also say that those of you who are hearing this and find this somewhat disconcerting, number one, as I've stated before, obtain the tapes, listen to them. Number two, if you have any disagreements, or if you wish, shall we say, one-on-one tutoring, call me by phone. I emphasize the word phone. Please do not write me and expect an answer. My correspondence load is already so heavy that I have to limit my responses to those who are personal friends or longtime supporters. I have also found that in corresponding, what happens is that the person who writes me makes one basic mistake, upon which he will build a 12-page letter. If I could grab him in the beginning and change the mistake or bring the error to his attention, a lot of wasted effort is prevented. Writing doesn't work. Most people are incapable of corresponding correctly. They are incapable of reducing their thoughts to writing correctly. This is a failure of the American educational system, but it is also a direct result of the sin that clouds the intellect of those who reject Catholicism. And I include those who call themselves Catholics but do not accept the dogma of no salvation outside the church. If you do not accept the dogma of no salvation outside the church, you cannot go to heaven, because you must accept all the dogmas of the faith in order to achieve salvation. So I warn you now that if you have difficulty with this, call me on the phone. I'll straighten you out. I will prove to you by Socratic method or any other technique that you will accept that this is a dogma which you will affirm as being true, necessary, and appropriate to any system which claims to be founded by Jesus and affirming the truths eternally to men, so that men may come to a knowledge of the truth and be saved. Again, don't write me. Call me. Or, of course, you can obtain my publication, The Armament, in which I deal with this issue frequently. I am quite capable of writing my thoughts in such a way that people can comprehend them. This essentially ends the tape. I hope that you've appreciated it. I hope that you have enjoyed it. I hope that this will give you an incentive to obtain further ARM products. We're always interested in your comments. Comments are quite different from letters. I don't have to respond to them. Your suggestions, your criticisms. We do prefer them by phone, but we certainly will accept them by correspondence. And, of course, we hope that this will act as an inducement to you to become an evangelist, an apologist for the faith, and, since you need to be armed to do that, that this will act as an incentive for you to obtain other ARM products, not only the ones that I've mentioned on this tape, but other ARM products which deal with virtually every situation you will come up with if you try to defend, explain, or advance the faith. And ARM uses primarily biblical bases and right reason. We also hope that you will feel, I guess we should say, a sense of sympathy for Carl. It is difficult to attempt to defend a position which is not true, not Catholic, not logical, not rational, and not the right one. He gave a valiant effort, but of course it failed miserably. You may contact us by writing us at ARM 55 Palen, that's P Paul A L E N Road, number 38, Hopewell Junction, New York, 12533. Our telephone number, at least at the time of this recording, was 914-226-4172. But our telephone number is in all of our literature, at least our current telephone number will, so go by that if it happens to be different. We hope to hear from you again. We hope that this will be the beginning of a start of your journey, both to heaven by means of salvation, and that salvation shall be achieved by you fulfilling your obligation, which is imposed upon you by your baptism, to be an evangelist, a missionary, a light to the world to bring others to Christ. And to bring others to Christ, you must bring them to Christ through the Blessed Mother and through the Church of Rome, outside of which there is no salvation. Thank you for listening. God bless.
Because the truth that is necessary for his salvation, God will not withhold from him. So if he says that I have sought the truth of Christianity and I still remain in the Presbyterian Church, then either he is lying, or he's calling God a liar, in which case he is lying again. And
that's the problem is that, as someone brought up to me earlier this morning, and this may have been helpful for you, it might have been good had you been born a non-Catholic and then converted, because you might have a sense of what non-Catholics are actually like. You seem to basically diabolize them, and that they're liars, or they're knaves, they're fools, they're ignorant, what have you. Now, some are, but some Catholics are too. But I think your problem basically is that you don't appreciate the various modes by which a person reaches certitude. It might, you know, do you good to review Newman's Grammar of Assent, which I think is helpful in demonstrating how we don't necessarily come to our beliefs, our understandings through syllogistic reasoning. That's part of it. There are many other things that tend to argue vector in on a conclusion. And in our lives, we take all these things together. And what you seem to do is to so simplify things that, in essence, you say, if I give all the facts to an intelligent Protestant, by which you mean someone who is able to use syllogistic reasoning, and he sees the premises and doesn't draw my conclusion, he's either stupid, which by definition he's not because he's intelligent, or he's acting out of bad faith and therefore damned. I don't think that's remotely reasonable, and I think it's a considerable insult, not just to Protestants or other non-Catholics, but actually to Catholics, because they themselves don't work that way. There are many Catholics, I'm sure that you speak to, who may be overpowered by the force of your argumentation, by the decibels you have, even by the logic, but don't find your arguments convincing. And there's an analogous situation where the Protestant may not find it convincing.
Okay, Carl, the relationship with Catholics is irrelevant, and whether Catholics like me or not like me is irrelevant.
It's not irrelevant, Benny, because what we're talking about here are human souls. And what I'm concerned about when you or I go out and represent the church, which is what we do, not officially commissioned maybe, but we are exercising our role as Catholic laymen to spread the faith. I'm concerned about the results that may get. And if the net result is that we drive non-Catholics further from the faith and just solidify their prejudices, if we shut off Catholics from a willingness to engage in apologetics and evangelization, then we're failing. If, on the other hand, what we do is tend to bring Catholics to a position where they know their faith better and are more likely to want to spread it themselves, and if we bring non-Catholics closer to the church, whether they come all the way in quickly or they just move, then we're doing something right. We have to evaluate whether what we're doing works. There is a utilitarian end to this.
I agree, Carl, but as I stated before, the only way to determine if it works is to count heads once we're in heaven, because bringing people into the church or driving them out is not the point. Getting people into heaven is the point. But again, what I'm saying is you're dealing with irrelevancies. You haven't answered my basic question, so let me put it very simply in a very specific example. If I understand correctly, the way the Immaculate Conception was pronounced, I believe 1854, was pronounced as a doctrine necessary for salvation. And what it was stated was, if you teach opposite from this, you are damned. What I'm simply saying is, those who teach opposite from this are damned, or the Pope was wrong and papal infallibility collapses. And, by the same token, those who teach opposite it cannot do so in good faith. Because he in good faith who seeks the truth on this, God will lead him to it. Because the God we adore is the God of truth, who will never withhold from a man that truth which is necessary for his salvation. So you're absolutely correct. I do diabolize the Protestant who says, I have studied the Immaculate Conception, and I am not convinced. I have got down on my knees. I have asked God to enlighten me. He has told me it is wrong. Yes, that man will, unless he changes his view before the last judgment, unless he repents, unless he confesses, be damned, because the Immaculate Conception, I'm just using a specific example, is bad.